over her like an uninvited ghost. She'd been awake several minutes now, but she could still feel it, his knife in her chest, his greedy, tragic claim on some of the magic. If only Father were alive and here to comfort her, as he used to do when Vika had nightmares and would crawl into his bed and his warm arms in the next room. But now that room was empty. Vika curled into a ball beneath the covers. It was not easy to discern what was real and what was a dream. As Vika blinked the sleep from her eyes, her body actually did feel lesser than it had before. Was it the cuff that was draining her? But that didn't make sense, for she wasn't doing anything against Pasha or Yuliana's orders. If the bracelet was supposed to help the Tsardom, it wouldn't weaken her while she was asleep. Actually, it wasn't that Vika felt weaker. It was more that, with all of Bolshevnoi Duplo's power, she'd recently felt like a snake, poised to strike, able to accomplish anything. Now, however, she felt more like a coiled spring, still full of energy and potential, but considerably less formidable. Why? Vika bolted upright in bed. What if? She recalled the snag in her magic in the dream, and the real hitch when she'd conjured the dome over the Kazakh steppe. She hadn't understood what could have caused it if all of Bolshevnoi Duplo's magic was hers. Unless it wasn't.
The magic is meant for us together,
Vika whispered, remembering her dream. It was Nikolai. It had to be. He was reaching for a share of the magic again, extricating himself from the bench. She knew it like she knew herself, because she could feel him on the other side of their invisible string now, tugging even if he didn't mean to, tied to her because they were the sun and the moon, always together, yet always apart.
The tea leaves.
Always fighting. The magic pulled. Vika leaped out of bed. She evanesced to where it was calling her. Chapter 15. At midnight, Nikolai arrived. Pasha was already in the square, standing a few paces away from the statue of Peter the Great. His blonde hair was damp from the flurries around him, his entire body tense, as if ready to either pounce or flee, whichever the situation called for. Nikolai approached with slow, measured steps, his boots making little noise on the snowy cobblestones. The sky was grey with clouds that parted only for the moon, and the few street lamps around them were decorated in silver garlands for Christmas. But these decorations that used to bring Nikolai joy now elicited nothing within him. The lamps might as well be choked with black vines. Pasha watched, his eyes widening as Nikolai drew near, and yet remained a shadow under the moonlight. Or perhaps he was simply surprised to find Nikolai truly alive. Pasha bowed slightly, attempting to hide his shock.
Bonsoir, mon frère. I do not think that greeting is appropriate, Nikolai said, as he came up to the thunderstone. It is not, in fact, a good night.
At that moment, a gust of wind and snow blasted through Peter's square. Another moment later, Vika appeared. Nikolai's silhouette lungs forgot how to breathe. He stared at her, and it was as if time had been suspended in the square, the falling snow the only indication that the seconds continued to march on. Despite the painful tightness of his lungs constricting for lack of air, Nikolai began to smile. Here they were, all three of them, together again. This was not supposed to be possible.
Thank goodness you're here,
Pasha said to Vika, breaking the quiet. She gave him a quick nod. Nikolai choked.
Deuces! She's here for Pasha!
Air rushed back into his lungs, and his shadowed chest expanded again.
Is it true that you're here for him?
Nikolai tried not to glare at Vika, but he couldn't help it. All he felt was a swell of cold inside him, much like when he'd escaped from the dream bench, and the chilly sensation washed over him so completely it subsumed him.
I'm here for myself,
Vika said. Nikolai laughed mirthlessly.
Of course you are. But the question is, why are you and the Cesarevich here?
She asked.
Because I want the crown.
What? Pasha and Vika said at the same time. Nikolai shrugged.
You heard what I said.
On what basis do you have a claim to be heir?
Pasha's voice was steady, but he pressed his hands flat against his coat. Nikolai recognized the gesture. A method for producing outer calm that Pasha had used for years to deal with the pressure of being part of the imperial family. His need to employ it now made Nikolai smirk.
The Tsar was my father,
Nikolai said.
You made it official by bestowing upon me the title of Grand Prince at my memorial service. But it's unclear whether the Tsar was your father. I hear your mother rather enjoyed the company of a certain staff captain. Alexis Okotnikov, was it?
How dare you!
Pasha's illusion of calm evaporated, and he advanced toward Nikolai, while at the same time beginning to remove his glove, to throw it down as a challenge in a duel.
No!
Vika started to run between them. Nikolai snapped his fingers. A dozen sabers appeared in the air and flew at Vika, surrounding her, their sharp tips gleaming and pointed at her. She skidded to a halt. Snow piled around her boots.
What are you doing?
Vika said. Pasha stared.
Release her!
But Nikolai was paralyzed by his own warring thoughts. What had he done? Vika wasn't supposed to be his adversary anymore. They'd joined together at the end of the game. And yet here they were again, one against the other.
I'll release myself.
Vika frosted the ends of the swords, encasing the tip of each blade in a block of ice. They tumbled from the air and onto the cobblestones with a dozen heavy thunks. Her ability to free herself so easily shook Nikolai out of his stupor. He might have returned to reality, but somehow the lion's share of magic from Bolshevnoi Duplo seemed to remain hers, as if his shadow self couldn't quite hold on to power. They were not as evenly matched as they'd been in the past.
Are you all right?
Pasha asked Vika. She ignored him and turned to Nikolai.
Don't do that to me again.
She picked up one of the swords, melting the ice so that the water dripped down the blade, and brandished it in the moonlight. It was a haunted echo of the end of the game, when the sun had caught on Nikolai's dagger. He did not miss the reference, and an unseen band tightened around his shadow heart.
Neither of you are thinking straight,
Vika said.
Your Imperial Highness, you cannot challenge an enchanter to a duel. He'd kill you on his first turn. And as for you, Nikolai.
She whirled to face him, although she lowered the sword before she spoke again.
You're better than this.
Am I? But what was greatness? Was it constantly accepting second place? Nikolai had spent his entire 18 years coming in second. He'd merely been tolerated in his village on the steppe. In St. Petersburg, he'd been permitted only to skirt the outer edges of the nobility, and he'd conceded the crown's game. Whether by Nikolai's doing or not, usually not, first place seemed always just beyond reach, taunting him. Now, however, the throne was right there for his taking, and that same cold flame that had flared to life when he escaped the dream bench burst forth again. What was this chill, and where had it come from? And yet Nikolai didn't care, for the possibility of finally reaching his potential sent a thrill and a surge of strength through his veins.
I don't want to be second to Pasha anymore. I won't.
Vika stood waiting for him to respond to her. Nikolai shrugged.
Things have changed, and what I used to be doesn't matter.
Chapter 16. If Vika had had any hope for Pasha and Nikolai to make up, to shake hands and be friends again, it died with this declaration. and it seemed there was no need now to tell Nikolai of Renata's prophecy, for it was laid out here as clear as ice, or as murky as ice. The analogy worked either way. Vika shook her head. Nikolai had always been ambitious. He hadn't taken it easy on her during the game. But this sort of ambition was different, driven by malice rather than self-preservation. This wasn't the Nikolai she knew, the one she might have loved. Had turning into a shadow done this to him?
Did I do this by condemning him to anti-death at the end of the game?
Her arms, which until then had remained outstretched to keep Nikolai and Pasha apart, fell to her sides. Meanwhile, Pasha simply stood staring at Nikolai. Pasha's hand remained on his other glove, but rather than tearing it off, his fingers now pinched the edge of the leather tightly.
"Why are you doing this?"
Vika asked Nikolai. He laughed, its ring laced in black at the edges, like a funeral ribbon, pretty but mournful at the same time. The sound tied itself into a hard knot in Vika's chest.
"Pasha demanded our deaths without even flinching. I was irrational with grief," Pasha said. "And he regretted it," Vika said,
her defense of Pasha spilling out and catching her by surprise. But despite her anger at him, she knew commanding the end of the game had not been without consequence for Pasha.
"He apologized." "After the fact," Nikolai said. "It doesn't change what he actually did. He was supposedly my best friend, and he claimed to love you. Yet you forgive his betrayal and cruelty so easily."
Vika looked at the statue of Peter the Great. She couldn't look at Nikolai. She couldn't look at Pasha either.
"Because Nikolai is right."
Pasha advanced, his hand no longer holding onto the glove.
"I inherited the game. I had to do it." "No, you didn't," Nikolai said. "You could have just let it play out. You could have expressed sadness, regret, at the game's very existence. You did not have to force an ending." I know that now."
Pasha averted his eyes to the snow at his feet.
"Are you going to kill me?" "Eventually," Nikolai said. "But in the meantime, I'm going to make you wish I had done it quickly."
He opened his arms and swept them around him, as if encompassing all of St. Petersburg, all of Russia.
"To start with, I'm going to turn the people against you. You may not always have cared about being Tsar, yet you've always been Russia's golden heir, their beloved prince. But by the time the coronation takes place next month, the Empire will loathe you, and it will be upon my head that they set the great imperial crown."
The moonlight cast a white glow upon everything beneath it, but Pasha's face paled even more at Nikolai's threat.
"Is this what you really want?" Vika asked Nikolai. "To rule an empire? To take on all the responsibility that comes with it? Your life will no longer be your own."
Nikolai paused, but a few seconds later he looked away from Vika, and it was clear whatever internal argument he'd had was done.
"My life was never my own anyway," he said. "It was Galina's, and then it was the game's. If you think about it, my life always belonged to the Empire. This isn't much different. My decision is made."
Nikolai reached out to touch the Thunderstone and looked up at Peter the Great.
"What are you?"
Vika began to ask. But she stopped, because the massive statue shifted on his saddle. The horse came to life beneath him, the corded muscles flexing like living bronze.
"Nikolai," Vika said. "Don't!"
Pasha gaped.
"What do you intend to do?"
he whispered, the question nearly lost under the stamping of the horse's enormous hooves. Nikolai dusted off some snow that clung to his shadow coat, his movement casual, as if it were an everyday occurrence that a statue came alive beside him.
Legend has it that Peter the Great guards our city from the enemy, he said. As such, he's going to warn the citizens that an enemy walks among them. And this is the story he will tell. The Cesarevich discovered that his brother was the rightful heir to the throne. So he attempted to have his brother murdered in order to secure the crown for himself.
That isn't true, and you don't have any evidence of it, Pasha said.
He hurled himself at Nikolai before Vika could do anything to stop him. But Nikolai had a shield around himself, and Pasha rebounded off it and fell backward. He landed on the snow-covered cobblestones with a hard smack.
It doesn't matter, Nikolai said. Once the story is out, it's out.
Don't, Vika said. Not only because of His Imperial Highness, but also you'll expose us. You'll expose magic, and chaos will ensue.
That's part of the point.
With that, Nikolai waved a shadow finger in the air, like a conductor's baton, and the bronze horse reared and whinnied. Peter the Great shouted, his voice as low and sonorous as cathedral bells. His horse leaped off the thunderstone, and they charged out of Peter's Square, toward the rest of St. Petersburg.
Vika, please!
Pasha said, staring after the statue, which kicked up snow and chunks of stone as it galloped away.
Do something!
Nikolai leaned against the thunderstone, watching them. Vika recoiled. This cruel, detached boy was nothing like her, Nikolai, not even when they'd had to fight each other in the game.
This is my fault, she thought. He gave me his life and became a shadow. But I can't watch him lose his soul.
She'd have to save Nikolai from himself. Beneath her coat sleeve, however, the bracelet had begun to heat. She had to obey Pasha to stop the statue of Peter the Great. Although there was no way of knowing whether Pasha or Nikolai was the rightful heir to the throne, Pasha was still the one officially next in line. Vika's loyalty was bound to that. She curled into herself for a moment, as her soul seemed to tear itself in two. How could she be Imperial Enchanter when she had to fight Nikolai to do it? How could she be true to herself when a vow required one thing of her, but her heart tugged her toward the only other person like her?
What is it that I truly want?
But the cuff didn't care. It seared into her skin. Vika inhaled a sharp, strangled breath.
Debate later. Action now.
She whirled to Pasha.
You! Back to the palace!
Vika raised her arms, dissolved him, and evanesced him to the warm confines of the Winter Palace, all before he could utter a syllable of protest.
And you!
She spun toward Nikolai, who still leaned against the Thunderstone. He cocked his head at her expectantly.
As Imperial Enchanter, I'm sworn to the Cesarevich. Don't make me fight you.
Nikolai shrugged.
Our fates are already in motion. We cannot stop them.
I don't believe you,
Vika said. He hesitated.
If only you were right, he said quietly.
For a second, Vika thought she could hear the old Nikolai in his tone. But then he secured his hat and shrugged again.
Too bad you're wrong.
Vika's heartbeat stumbled, like it had momentarily forgotten the steps to the mazurka. But she shook her head. Their fates had been in motion during the game, and they'd averted that end. She had to believe they could do it again.
We aren't finished, she said.
Then she dissolved herself, and evanesced after Peter the Great. Chapter 17 Vika rematerialized on the back of the statue's saddle. She yelped, for the speed at which the statue galloped almost threw her off the horse, and she looped an arm around Peter the Great's thick bronze waist. He snarled, the sound all sharp knife points and poisoned arrowheads. Vika cringed.
I can understand how he won so many wars, she thought,
even if this version was only a replica of the near-mythic Tsar. but she maintained her grip on the statue and cast an enchantment to secure herself more firmly on the saddle. Peter the Great snarled again, but when he couldn't shake her from the horse, he turned his attention back to the streets before him. They were charging into the center of the city now, over bridges and along canals.
"Grand Prince Karimov is alive, and he is the true heir to the throne!"
Peter the Great shouted, his voice full and commanding, echoing through the narrow alleys.
"Shame on you, Cesarevich, for the attempted murder of your brother!"
Candles began to light the insides of apartments, as Peter the Great shouted the same accusations over and over, and his horse's bronze hooves roused the city from its slumber. Vika whipped the wind to try to drown out the sound of the statue's cries, but he only yelled louder.
"He needs a muzzle," she thought.
As they tore around a corner onto Nevsky Prospect, Vika spotted a few flags outside one of the pastel buildings.
"That will have to do."
She ordered a blue and gold one to rip itself from its mast. It hurtled through the air toward the statue, its fabric flapping violently in the wind, and slapped itself across Peter the Great's mouth like a gag. Vika charmed its loose ends around the bronze Tsar's head and tied it into a tight triple knot. The statue bit clear through the flag and spat its shredded remains into the snow.
"Oh, mercy!"
Peter the Great yanked on the reins then. His horse bucked. It jerked the breath out of Vika's lungs, and she lost her grip around the statue's waist. If not for her charm that kept her in the saddle, she would have been hurled off the horse and smashed against one of Nevsky Prospect's buildings, or impaled by a flagpole. But the most frightening part of it, this ruthless statue was Nikolai's enchantment. Memories of the game flashed before Vika, as she was tossed to and fro on the bronze horse, recollections of the stone birds that had tried to kill her on this very boulevard, the invisible box in Palace Square that attempted to compress her to her death, and the imagination box, elegant and captivating on the outside, but capable of murder on the inside. Not unlike Nikolai. Perhaps he was not so different from his earlier self at all. Perhaps this malice had been inside him all along, and Vika had only chosen not to see. Her chest constricted at the thought. Peter the Great craned his bronze neck and saw that Vika still sat on his saddle. He roared, then dug his heel into his horse, and they charged down Nevsky Prospect. Vika clasped onto his waist as he began to bellow again.
"Grand Prince Karimov is alive! And he is the true heir to the throne! Shame on you, Cesarevich, for the attempted murder of your brother!"
"I cannot play nicely if Nikolai isn't going to."
Vika climbed up onto her feet, balancing on the saddle in her boots, struggling to get upright, even with the charm to keep her from tumbling off. Finally, she managed to stand all the way up.
"This ends now!"
she yelled at the statue. She looked to the night sky, cloudy but for the spot where the moon shone through. She took a deep inhale, breathing and sensing the particles of electricity in the air. It was mostly water in the clouds, eager to turn to more flurries, but there were enough sparks for her to work with.
"If I cannot stop you as you are,"
she said to Peter the Great,
"then I will change what you are."
She swirled her hands above her, and the air grew prickly. It crackled at her command. Then the electricity coalesced and shot down at an angle, a lightning bolt headed directly for Peter the Great's head. Vika undid the enchantment that attached her to the saddle, and she leaped off just as the lightning struck the statue. Peter the Great's face melted instantaneously, and his proclamations about Nikolai and Pasha devolved into incoherent shouts, his mouth full of molten metal. And then his mouth liquefied completely, and the proclamation ceased. Vika rolled on the ground from the momentum of her jump, but she continued to command lightning bolt after lightning bolt. They hit Peter the Great and melted the rest of him into a puddle of liquid bronze, streaming off the saddle. The horse, no longer having a rider to direct it, came to a standstill in the middle of Nevsky Prospect. It whinnied, and then a moment later, it transformed, along with Peter the Great's melted remains dripping off its back, back into lifeless bronze. Vika propped herself against the Bizet and Sons storefront, the glass etched with a list of their tailoring services. She panted as she caught her breath. Disaster averted. Or so she thought. But then she looked up, above the shops that were shuttered for the night, and saw that many of the windows in the apartments on the second and third stories were open, their occupants in their nightclothes, hanging over the ledges. Some stared at what was left of Peter the Great with their mouths agape. A few shrieked hysterically. But the worst were the ones who whispered to those beside them, yet never took their eyes off Vika. She caught the shape of the word witch on their lips, and heard the word devil in the wind. They crossed themselves, and she knew from father's warnings during her childhood that these same people would soon conspire to hunt her down. Vika might have stopped Nikolai's rampaging statue before it shouted its message through all of St. Petersburg, but she hadn't stopped it soon enough. A good part of the city had seen a bronze czar come to life, and an enchantress command lightning to liquefy it. Vika hurried down Nevsky Prospect, turning onto a side street as soon as she could.
"Nikolai isn't our only problem now," she thought, her pulse racing.
For the existence of magic, so long kept a tidy secret, had been unveiled. Chapter 18 Ilya had been on guard duty tonight, and when Pasha snuck out of the palace, Ilya had followed. He'd crouched against the side of a building at the edge of Peter's Square and watched the entire confrontation unfold, far enough away that he could not make out what had been said, but certainly near enough to see. He had managed to keep himself from crying out in surprise and revealing himself by clamping his hand over his mouth when he first saw Nikolai's shadow, and again when Peter the Great's statue came to life. But as soon as Nikolai departed the square, Ilya coughed, each sputter like its own cloud in the night air.
"The girl appeared out of nothing, then disappeared, like she did to the Cesarevich," he said to himself. "And that was Grand Prince Karimov."
Ilya gave up crouching and sat in the snow banked against the building. The Grand Prince could command magic and come back from the dead. Or he had never been dead. Ilya leaned back against the building as he tried to make sense of what he'd seen. It was unbelievable, and yet it was real. He stared at the empty Thunderstone and the square where the Cesarevich and the two enchanters had just stood. Then he shook his head as it slowly sank in.
"This changes everything."
Chapter 19 By morning, the churches of St. Petersburg overflowed with those afraid of the devil's arrival, and the streets filled with men concealing knives in every sleeve and pocket, whispering of capturing the witch and burning her alive. Vika was safely ensconced at home on Ovchinin Island, but she didn't need to be in St. Petersburg to know the city was on the brink of panicked hysteria. She'd seen it and heard it stirring already as she tamed Peter the Great's statue. And fear always flourished in the dark of night. With the sun rising behind her, Vika stood at the edge of the island's forests, looking across the frozen bay at St. Petersburg in the distance. She was supposed to report to the Winter Palace to meet with Pasha and Yuliana, and yet the string that tethered her to Nikolai pulled insistently.
"Where are you, Nikolai?"
She closed her eyes and tried to feel his magic. But there was nothing. Not even a hint of his silken warmth. Vika sighed as she opened her eyes. He must have a barrier shield around him. She shouldn't be wanting him anyway. Sergei had raised her better than to turn her back on the tsardom so easily. Father had been Russian through and through, all balalaika music and borscht and rustic saunas full of birch branches and leaves. The same love for Russia infused Vika's soul, and she knew in her blood that what the country needed was not a vengeful shadow as Tsar, but a boy who had grown up in the imperial family, learning the history of the people and the art of ruling the empire. Vika might have loved Nikolai and loathed Pasha, but that didn't mean Nikolai was right for the throne. Not at all.
I suppose I must go, she thought, even though I don't want to.
Duty called. So Vika evanesced into the former Tsar's study in the Winter Palace. Her head spun as she rematerialized. Stars actually flickered at the edges of her vision. She seemed to arrive more quickly than it ordinarily took her to cover the distance from Ovchinen Island to the city, as if the magic she commanded was more potent this morning, like drinking 5 or 6 cups of tea instead of 1. How bizarre, especially considering that Nikolai was now sharing in Bolshevnoi Duplo's power. It took a moment for Vika to shake the stars from her head. The young guard at the door, Ilya, she thought his name was, gawked at the space Vika occupied, where there hadn't been a girl a few seconds before. But there was no point in hiding her comings and goings. With the secret of magic out, everyone knew what she was. When her vision cleared, she took in the study. A painting of St. Petersburg hung behind the desk, and a portrait of Catherine the Great graced the wall to Vika's right. The entire room was decorated in royal blue and gold, from the crown molding to the trim around the floor-to-ceiling windows to the Persian rug upon the floor. Yuliana sat at the late Tsar's desk, naturally, and Pasha paced in front of the windows. He'd clearly been doing so since before Vika arrived. He'd worn a groove into the carpet with his boots. But why did Vika even care? She might have intended to defend his right to the crown, but it didn't mean he shouldn't suffer. Pasha had brought this stress, arguably this entire turn of events, upon himself. Yuliana cast a withering look at Vika.
You couldn't have put down the statue more discreetly.
Vika scowled right back at her.
Next time you try your hand at taming a bronze Tsar come to life, we'll see how discreetly you manage it. Besides, you're not the one the entire city wants to roast on a stake, so I think I'm the one with the right to complain, if anyone can.
Pasha groaned.
Enough! Bickering won't solve anything. Some believe the statue was one of the 4 horsemen portending the apocalypse. People have already begun to flee the city, and the black market in Sanaya Square is overrun by those who can't afford to leave, seeking wards against evil spirits. Oh, Vika said,
but only partially in response to what Pasha had just said.
Oh, what?
Yuliana asked.
I just understood something. Belief begets more magic.
Vika recalled the stories Father used to tell her about when Russia and other countries believed more openly in magic.
That's why it was easier for me to evanesce. Before today, only a handful of us knew about magic. But after Nikolai's statue, tens of thousands of people suddenly believe, or fear, magic. And that, in turn, stokes Bolshevnoi Duplo's ability to generate more.
She held up her hand, which sparked visibly at the fingertips. She jittered as she tried to stand still on the carpet. Vika had never been one who could be easily contained, but this surge in the power gave new definition to the word irrepressible. Yuliana scrunched her nose.
However, it also means that not only are you more powerful, but Nikolai will be as well.
The sparks at Vika's fingers snuffed out, the momentary thrill of all that power suffocated by Yuliana's insight. There would likely be enough magic now that there would be no more hitches, real or dreamed. But it also meant bigger and more dangerous enchantments. Vika crossed the study and sank into one of the pair of blue and gold chairs in the center of the room, angled to face the Tsar's desk. Pasha dropped his head against the window frame with a resigned thunk.
Quel désastre! Agreed, it is a disaster.
Vika leaned into the backrest of her chair.
We have to save Nikolai.
Pasha came and sat in the chair next to her. He made a miserable attempt to smile, which said quite a lot, because Pasha could always smile. His inability to do so made something inside Vika twinge. even though she was still furious at him for both the end of the game and the asinine command to conjure him a midnight snack.
"Save Nikolai from what?"
Pasha asked. Vika shook her head.
"I don't know. But it's obvious the boy from last night was not the same one who sacrificed his life for me at the end of the game. Whatever is influencing him, or whatever change has taken root because he's a shadow, must be undone."
Yuliana laughed caustically.
"I don't care if it's the devil himself who's possessing Nikolai. He made an outright threat on the Cesarevich's life."
Of course, Yuliana knew everything. Pasha had undoubtedly shared every detail as soon as Vika had evanesced him back to the palace last night.
"That's treason," the Grand Princess continued. "There is no option to save someone like that. Nikolai must be arrested and executed." "But he's done nothing wrong," Vika said. "You call threatening to usurp the throne nothing wrong?"
Vika squeezed the armrest of her chair and took a deep breath.
"Those were words spoken out of hurt. Perhaps he can be convinced to change his mind. He hasn't actually tried to take the crown."
"She has a point," Pasha said. "So far, Nikolai has committed only civil disobedience."
Vika stared at him. Was he really supporting her argument, even though Nikolai had threatened to kill him?
"You are both far too forgiving."
Yuliana crossed her arms.
"I don't mean we should let Nikolai roam around, free to cause more trouble."
Pasha turned to Vika.
"Can you find and detain him somehow? If only I could show him how sorry I am. If he could see reason."
Vika blinked, still somewhat disbelieving that he'd taken her side. Then she shook her head.
"I don't know where Nikolai is. He has a barrier around himself."
"But you'll still try to find him?"
Pasha asked. She sighed.
"Yes, I'll still try."
It was a compromise, sloppily covering a half-truth. For now, they could pretend they would jail Nikolai and somehow find a resolution that satisfied all of them, and satisfied justice. But the other half of the truth was that compromise was impossible. Yuliana wanted to kill Nikolai. Vika wanted to save him. And Pasha didn't actually want the same thing Vika did. He wanted the past undone, and this problem to go away. She decided to shift the conversation, at least temporarily, away from what to do about Nikolai.
"The city needs calm after the statue's rampage last night," she said. "Perhaps we could reassure them by demonstrating to the people that my magic is good."
Yuliana tapped a quill against one of the gold map weights on the desk. She nodded.
"Not a bad idea. And we'll show them that you and your magic are under control, that you're Pasha's."
"I don't belong to anybody."
"But you do."
Yuliana used her quill to point at the bracelet. Vika banged the cuff against the armrest.
"I..."
Pasha exhaled loudly but said nothing, as if telling the two of them not to fight was a cause so lost it wasn't even worth uttering the words. For the sake of reaching a solution, Vika swallowed her protest. It tasted of bitter herbs. Pasha cleared his throat.
"I don't know how I feel about putting you in the line of danger, Vika. The city's mad. There's a bounty on your head."
She laughed. She didn't mean to, but it burst forth before she could stop it.
"I've survived another enchanter trying to kill me," she thought. "Ordinary people are no match."
Yet Pasha's concern thawed a touch more of Vika's resentment toward him. Here he was, facing not only a threat to the throne from Nikolai, but also a potential riot in the capital, and Pasha still had enough humanity within him to worry over Vika's safety. Perhaps he had not changed as much as she'd thought at the end of the game. Perhaps he'd merely gone astray and was now finding his way back to himself.
"Thank you for your concern," Vika said. "But I'll be fine."
It was only if Nikolai came after her that she would have something to worry about. No, not if. When? for if Nikolai meant to take the throne, the bracelet around Vika's wrist ensured that he'd have to fight his way through her, too. Vika's chest tightened, as though her heart were locking itself from hurt and throwing away the key.
It will be harder, if not impossible, to convince the people that Peter the Great's statue was a feat of engineering or a show, Pasha said. Unlike during the game, there were too many witnesses this time. We can't undo the people seeing the magic, can we?
No,
Vika said, her voice thin as she tried to recover from her own thoughts.
I can't erase memories.
She tried many a time before when she was younger, in hopes that Sergei would forget she'd done this or that wrong. It never worked. It only botched things further when he realized what she'd attempted and got her in more trouble. Pasha balled up his hands and pressed them against his eyes.
Damn it!
The magic swelled inside Vika. Seeing Pasha vulnerable helped her pull herself together. He needed her, his imperial enchanter.
What I'm suggesting, she said, is that if we can't hide magic, we ought to trumpet it. I don't know if the people can handle it,
Yuliana said.
History isn't on our side in terms of revealing magic to the masses.
Pasha slowly peeled his hands away from his face.
And yet, it's not as if St. Petersburg hasn't already been exposed. I say we give Vika's approach a try.
Yuliana chewed the inside of her cheek, skeptically. But Vika smiled.
Fine, if this is what you want.
Yuliana abandoned her quill and picked up the map weight instead, tapping it on the desk.
Here's my proposal. Pasha, the people need to see you. They trust in your goodness. You should ride through the city, give them comfort, tell them that magic is not to be feared, while Vika shows them.
Pasha nodded slowly.
That makes sense.
I'll stay behind, she said. They don't like me much.
Yuliana,
Pasha began. She shook her head.
It's all right. We each have our strengths and our weaknesses, remember? You are the one the people need right now.
Vika nodded. For once she agreed.
What sort of enchantment do you think would calm them?
She asked Pasha. He snapped his fingers as he thought.
The holidays are approaching. You could...
Snap, snap, snap.
How about conjuring a Christmas tree that gives gifts to the children?
And throws fire at Nikolai should he come near,
Yuliana said casually. The color drained from Pasha's face. Vika clenched her fists, digging her fingernails into her palms.
I'll do this on my own terms. No, we've just been through this. You use magic on our terms,
Yuliana said. Vika dug her fingernails deeper into her skin. Only a few moments ago, she'd been glad to be Imperial Enchanter. But now, even if she hadn't had the cuff around her wrist, she would have been able to feel the shackles tighten and the chain pull taut. The thing was, she was no longer helping Pasha solely because her vow compelled her to. But that didn't mean she was choosing him over Nikolai. Nikolai clearly needed help, too. He wasn't himself, and locked heart or not, Vika did not intend to allow his new ambition to swallow him, not without Vika putting up a fight to find the old Nikolai, her Nikolai, beneath the shadow. Also, she did not like being told precisely what to do.
I am not a mere foot soldier, she thought. I'm a general.
And yet, the bracelet... Her wrist weighed heavily against the chair. Yuliana continued talking, as if she hadn't just insulted Vika. Then again, Yuliana probably hadn't noticed. She was the Grand Princess, after all, accustomed to giving orders and having them followed without question.
How do we protect my brother if Nikolai appears during your tour of the city?
Pasha remained pale and silent in his chair.
I'll... Cast a shield around him while we're together,
Vika said, forcing herself to ignore Yuliana's slight. If Vika was going to be Imperial Enchanter, She'd have to learn to let insults from the Grand Princess go, for there would surely be a multitude of them.
And what about when you're not with him?
Vika shook her head.
I can't maintain a shield when I'm not near. The magic required for an enchantment like that would be immense, because the shield would need to be able to respond to whatever harm threatened His Imperial Highness. If I knew that it was going to be something specific, like swords or bullets, I could cast a shield, but I have no clue what...
Her mouth dried up. She couldn't finish the sentence.
What Nikolai has planned,
Pasha said quietly, finishing the thought for her. Vika bit her lip and nodded.
Well, we cannot leave Pasha completely exposed,
Yuliana said, her tone surprisingly soft. She'd stopped toying with the map weight, and now looked at her brother, as if memorizing him just in case his chair was empty the next time. Vika might not have liked the Grand Princess, but she understood that look. Yuliana's love for her family and her country was both her strength and her weakness. It had propelled her to suggest the quick ending to the game, and it would drive her decisions about stopping Nikolai.
I have an idea.
Vika touched the basalt pendant she wore around her neck. It glowed for a second as she infused it with an enchantment. Then she unfastened it.
Here,
she said to Pasha.
What is it?
He reached across the space between the chairs to take the necklace. But Vika remained where she was, and, instead, floated it to him. Pasha's face fell. Touching him seemed too much like taking sides, and although she was beginning to see signs of the old Pasha again, she had made it clear that she also wanted to save Nikolai. Not wanting to choose sides was also why she still called Pasha by his title, at least to his face.
I've charmed it, Your Imperial Highness, Vika said. As long as you're wearing the necklace, the enchantment allows you to communicate with me, even when I'm elsewhere, in case you need me. All you need to do is wrap your hand around the pendant as you're doing now, and I'll be able to hear you.
Pasha looked at the stone in his hand. Then he fastened it around his own neck.
Thank you.
He smiled at her, no trace of his disappointment remaining. His years of growing up in the Imperial family and practice with putting on facades was evident. Or perhaps knowing that Vika would be there for him offered him some comfort. In any case, he scooted to the edge of his chair and sat a bit taller.
Our plan, then, is twofold. We attempt to locate Nikolai, make amends, and stop this madness before any more damage is done. And in the meantime, we work on calming the people and convincing them that magic will be used for good. So you want me to enchant a Christmas tree on the city tour?
Vika asked.
Yes,
Pasha said.
Please. I still think you should include fire,
Yuliana said.
If an enchanter is going to burn at the stake, it might as well be Nikolai. Yuliana, no,
Pasha said, his hand tugging on a lock of hair.
I've made my decision. This is our plan. Now, I need to change clothes, or, write down what I'm going to say, or tell the guards to ready a carriage.
He practically vaulted out of his chair and hurried from the study. When he was well down the hall and out of earshot, Yuliana rose from behind the desk, as if none of what had transpired bothered her. It probably hadn't. She looked down her nose at Vika.
My brother's life is in your hands,
she said.
As is the future of all Russia. Think carefully as you choose your loyalties and make your decisions.
She held Vika's gaze for a long moment, before she turned on her heel and whisked out of the room. Vika stared at the door after them, sinking deeper into her chair. The weight of life and death and an entire empire was no small thing to bear. Chapter 20. One of Nikolai's stone sparrows had seen Vika through the windows of the Winter Palace, and Nikolai's curiosity had sabotaged him, tempting him here. He hovered on the edge of Palace Square, eyes narrowed at the green, gold, and white splendor in which the imperial family lived. Nikolai had thought there was an unbreakable connection between him and Vika. He thought that being two of a kind tied their fates together. He thought, at the end of the game, that she loved him. But last night, she'd stopped his statue of Peter the Great, and now she'd gone to Pasha again.
To him, not me.
Nikolai sighed and turned his back on the palace. Two enormous boxes sat before him in the center of the square. In the red one was a life-size jack-in-the-box. In the purple, a music box ballerina. Nikolai and Vika, in enchanted puppet form. He'd created them during the game, to perform a pas-de-deux in the sky every evening when the clock chimed 6 o'clock. And just like his dream benches that continued his legacy, the jack and ballerina still danced with each other every night. But now, Vika had chosen Pasha. After all Pasha had done to them. Why would she do such a thing? The cold ambition that had fueled Nikolai last night had weakened after he enchanted the statue of Peter the Great. It seemed to ebb and flow, lessening after he performed some feat of magic, and strengthening when he grew upset. At least this was what he'd observed so far. And true to theory, it flared up again now, as Nikolai remembered how Vika had turned her back on him so easily, the chill flying through his veins like cold blue flames. He narrowed his eyes.
I never want to watch these puppets again.
No one could see him, for Nikolai had cast a shroud around himself. Of course, he could have frightened them with his shadow form if he'd wanted to, but there was something twisted and lovely about causing mayhem and having the people blame Vika and Pasha. Nikolai steepled his fingers together, and the crank on the jack's box began to turn slowly. Its tinny tune rang through the square, and those who'd merely been passing through stopped to watch and listen. Do re mi fa sol la ti do. C major. Nikolai's fists tightened. Do re mi fa sol la ti do. G major. Do re mi fa sol la ti do. D major. His nails dug through the tips of his gloves. Do re mi fa sol la ti do. Again and again. All 12 major scales, faster and faster and faster, until Nikolai's hands flew violently open, and pop! The jack jumped out of his box. The jack was not dressed in the red and black diamonds of a harlequin, as he used to be. Now the jack was entirely grey. Dark, dark grey, from wooden head to wooden toe. Nikolai's breath sped up. Music from the ballet, Zephyr et Flore, began to tinkle out of the purple box. The lid cracked open, and the ballerina slipped out. No longer just a pretty thing in periwinkle tulle, but something with a glimmer of cunning in her painted eyes. She curtsied to the jack. Instead of bowing and inviting her to dance, though, as he'd always done before, the jack leaped into the sky. Nikolai's anger seemed to concentrate his power, to amplify it. The jack spun for a moment in the air in a slow-motion pirouette. Then it exploded in a burst of wooden splinters and metal gears, which in turn transformed into thousands of tiny mechanical birds that flapped away. The collective beat of their wings thrummed through the air. The people in Palace Square issued a collective gasp. One woman screamed. A man shouted for everyone to find cover in the nearest church. Nikolai's pulse matched the frenetic rhythm of the flock of birds, but the ballerina stood still, watching. What was her reaction supposed to be? How had Vika felt, watching Nikolai die at the end of the game and vanish before her eyes? Nikolai clenched his fists tightly again, wanting desperately for the ballerina to collapse into a heap and cry. Or to fly into the air after the jack, to chase every last bird and convince them to come back, because she loved him. But instead, the ballerina's mouth only turned down at its painted corners. She watched the last of the mechanical birds as it disappeared into the clouds. Then she twirled on her toe and descended into her purple box. Just like Vika had done now, disregarded Nikolai and moved on. How could she be so callous?
What happened?
Someone shouted as the crowd in the square fled. It was the exact question raging through Nikolai's head. He blasted the boxes apart, sending shards of red and purple wood across the square and shattering the cobblestones beneath them. The few people who dallied ran screaming. When the dust settled, the ballerina lay unharmed but limp in the middle of the rubble. Click, click, click. Not clapping, for Palace Square was nearly empty now, but the sound of talon-like nails clacking together.
So melodramatic,
a familiar raspy voice said. Nikolai whirled around. A hooded figure lurked behind him.
Please don't glower at me like that, she said.
Even though no one else can see the expression on your face, I can feel it. A son's disapproval is a special weapon, and it wounds me to my withered core.
Nikolai almost felt bad. Almost.
You extracted yourself from the dream bench,
Aijana said quietly, as if she'd already known but was simply confirming the fact. But how could she have known? She hadn't been there when Nikolai escaped.
Renata came to visit me. Perhaps there's something about her that gave me the mental strength to break free. But in any case, you see, I didn't need you.
Aijana sucked in air between her missing teeth. He exhaled. A scrap of sympathy found its way to Nikolai.
I'm sorry. I'm not accustomed to having a maternal figure in my life.
Or someone like me who continues to show up unannounced.
Well, that part I'm used to, he thought.
Galina used to appear for lessons all the time, when Nikolai least expected it. So often that he actually began to expect the unexpected, if that made any sense. Aijana ventured a step closer. Nikolai took a step away.
If you'll excuse me, I have somewhere else I need to be.
Which is?
None of your business.
The truth was, he was going to see Galina. Nikolai might have had his sights set on the Winter Palace, but until that was officially his home, he'd need a place to stay, a base from which to plan.
You know I'll follow you if you don't tell me where you're going,
Aijana said. Nikolai sighed. He did know that.
Fine. I'm going to see Galina.
Aijana swiped away a lock of greasy hair from her face and grinned.
Your best idea yet. You'll reap a great deal of energy by killing a mentor. Her power was nothing compared to what yours used to be, but her ability to command magic would likely benefit you.
I'm not going to kill her!
Nikolai's earlier sympathy for his mother disappeared, and he glared at her.
I spent all night wandering the city. I need a place to sleep.
She shrank under her hood again. He didn't care. He began to stalk away.
Nikolai, wait.
He kept walking. Aijana scurried after him, her limp more pronounced when she had to hurry.
I have rooms at a boarding house in Senaya Square, if you want a place to live.
He didn't turn around.
Senaya Square is a pit of filth and disrepute.
It was the home of gamblers and drunks, of lice and whores. Nikolai knew this, for Senaya Square was where he'd spent his little free time during his youth, before he met Pasha, that is, playing cards with louts and enchanting decks so he would win. He always felt sullied afterward. He shuddered now, thinking of it. Aijana stopped trying to keep up with him.
Senaya Square is also the sort of place where people know not to look each other in the eyes. The sort of place where a resurrected corpse and a living shadow might survive without too many questions. Because that, in truth, is what we are, my son.
Nikolai's stomach turned, and he halted mid-stride. Was that what he'd been reduced to? A shadow no better than the boars in those dark